This is really important to the Army because it helps us drive change and move faster.
You know, that's the professional service that we owe the Army, is like, if you have a good idea, voice it, put it at MWI, put it in the infantry, put it, you know, wherever it belongs, and help the Army progress.
And so I really think that our system of journals and the fact that it is totally public and unclassified is really like a superpower for the United States Army.
Hey, welcome back to the Modern War Institute podcast, brought to you with the generous support of the West Point Class of 1974. I'm John Amble, and this episode features a discussion about a subject that is often treated as a peripheral activity in the military, but is a defining characteristic of any profession, including the profession of arms: writing. Professional military writing is the way we share information, new ideas, and creative solutions to problems. It's the way we drive bottom-up change, and it's vital if the Army is to be prepared for the challenges of tomorrow's battlefield. That's why a year ago, the Army's senior-most leadership backed a new initiative called the Harding Project, aimed at renewing and re-energizing professional writing in the Army. In this episode, I'm joined by two of the leaders of that project and driving forces behind its work, Lieutenant Colonel Zach Griffiths and Sergeant First Class Leighton Summerlin. They describe progress made over the Harding Project's first year and explain why the Army needs its people to share their ideas by writing. Before we get to the discussion, a couple quick notes. First, a very special thank you, as always, to the West Point Class of 1974 for their generous support to MWI. And second, what you hear in this episode are the views of the participants and don't represent those of West Point, the Army, or any other agency of the U.S. government. All right, I hope you enjoy the conversation. Zach and Leighton, thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the MWI podcast.
Thanks, John, for having us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
So I asked you to sit down with me today to talk about the Harding Project, and we're going to get to that, but I think listeners will probably be able to hear a bit of a hum of activity in the background. That's because we are in Washington at AUSA, the annual convention of the Association of the United States Army, which is a sort of massive event, and we found about the quietest corner that we can, but I'm sure some of the buzz will make it through in the recording. The main reason I think it's important to note that we're recording this where we are is because this is an annual event. It's held every October, which means that this year's AUSA sort of marks the one-year anniversary of the Harding Project being launched and really gaining some quick momentum. Zach, you know, to begin, I wonder if you can kind of explain to listeners with no familiarity with it what the Harding Project is.
Yeah, John. So the Harding Project is an initiative to renew professional writing in the Army. And by professional writing, we really mean our system of branch journals and the other journals the Army has. So, you know, I'm a special forces officer. Special warfare is mine. I was in the infantry before. Infantry. You can find all these places where leaders in the Army can share lessons or push insights or even dissent respectfully back towards the Army. This is really important to the Army because it helps us drive change and move faster. We draw our name from Forrest Harding, who in the 1930s, about 100 years ago, renewed what's now infantry, then mailing list, and what is now Army by AUSA, then the infantry journal. But under his stewardship, those journals helped challenge the orthodoxy of the 1930s, coming out of the Great Depression and getting into World War II and getting us to combined arms with leaders like Eisenhower and Patton, writing about what they were experimenting with in the field. And then since then, we've seen similar drive of the Army coming out of the journals. So like Airland Battle in the 1980s, you know, comes out of discussion back and forth in Military Review and other journals. And then, you know, Multi-Domain Battle today, we call it FM30 is Multi-Domain Operations. That starts with General Perkins publishing Multi-Domain Battle in 2017. You know, so it takes like 7 years and tons of writing. But MWI also has some great examples of the impact that writing can have, such as, you know, tracking foreign disclosure officers. It may seem small, but I don't know when that, you know, a couple of years ago, John, the guy published an article that led the G1 of the Army to put an OPT together and track those folks so we can find them. So at all levels, you know, this writing matters, and the Harding Project is here to renew our system.
Yeah, the article you mentioned, we had an article written by a foreign disclosure officer, and for anyone who isn't familiar with what they do, they're the ones who determine what information we can share with allies and partners. It's one of those jobs that, you know, few people really think about, but it's so crucial, especially when we're operating in combined environments, you know, with other military forces. It's so important. And the Army had a number of people trained to do this, but it also had no way of tracking them. So in a crisis scenario, if we need to pull them and make use of them, there's really no good way of doing so. And the author in his article suggested a pretty simple fix that the Army within a few months adopted. I guess it's a pretty powerful example of the influence that you can have with a good idea and the commitment to sort of putting it out there and driving discussion forward. Layton, I want to ask you, and actually I should note here that I'm calling you both by your first name, in part because we know each other well, but also for another reason, one that you and I, Layton, have talked a lot about. In the Army, we're a rank and last name service. This writing is one area where it isn't the case that because one person outranks the other, that person has better ideas or knows more about how to structure an article, to maximize its impact. This is a team effort. It's one of the reasons, in fact, it's the reason that almost anybody who submits to MWI, I call by first name, and I want them to do the same to me. You know, this is a peer relationship that in which we're working toward the same goal together. So in this context, Lieutenant Colonel Zach Griffiths, Sergeant First Class Layton Summerlin, we're in a collaborative environment and using first names. I just want to mention that for listeners to be clear that this isn't to disrespect the rank that both of you have earned. That said, Layton, I want to ask you how you got involved in the Harding Project, because, a little over a year ago, you were a platoon sergeant in the 173rd Airborne, and now you've just spent the past year working in the Pentagon.
Yeah, my old brigade ops sergeant major is in the room right next to us over here, and yeah, we were just talking about it. So I was the 2021 MCO Drill Sergeant of the Year, and long story short, I ended up developing a class that was pulled up to the division level, and it was based on leadership, focused on the drill sergeants. And I taught the whole class on a whiteboard. And as I was leaving, I was challenged by my leadership, who enjoyed the class. They really wanted me to continue to teach it, but they wanted it to endure beyond my tenure. They challenged me to put it on writing so that way I could properly hand it over. And so after I did that, there was this idea that I had that where I could just take it to the Infantry Journal and maybe immortalize it. So that way, over the next 20 years, maybe five people would read it. I kind of lightly grew up reading the Infantry Journal and the Armor magazine, since I was a young sergeant. And so I thought maybe I could do the same thing for five people over the next 20 years where I'll just help a couple, some people would be influenced by it. And, that article got published last year, and then shortly after I PCS'd, and then a couple months later, I get a call from Major so-and-so at the time, because I couldn't remember his name, but it turned out to be Major Griffiths, and General George and Sergeant Major Weimer had read the article, and they had selected me to be on the Harding Project, and been working with Colonel Griffiths ever since.
But you can tell that story better. You were going to hang up on me.
Yeah, that is true. Yes. At the time, I was a platoon sergeant. I was acting first sergeant. I was the EIB land nav NCOIC. I had a lot of stuff going on. I was rigging up this lieutenant for a jump, and my phone rings. I was in Aviano, and my phone rings, and I was like, I'm not going to answer this DC number because I just didn't have time for it. But because of everything I had going on, I was like, okay, yeah, maybe it's a soldier, or maybe he needs help, whatever. And so I answer. And Major so-and-so is like, hey, I'm from the Chief of Staff's office. Do you have a minute to talk? And I was like, am I in trouble? And later I ended up telling him that if you had said yes, I was going to hang up on you. Because I just did not have the time to do that or deal with that. And he laughed and said no and told me about the Harding Project. And I was immediately sold. I've been a huge fan of the journals ever since. I think they serve such an important purpose. So, yeah.
You mentioned that publishing in the Infantry Journal might get you an article that's read by, say, 20 people. Virtually every branch in the Army has a professional journal or a bulletin. The problem is, in recent years especially, very few people were reading it. Zach, I wonder if you can sort of describe the problem, because you have the data that shows what a problem it's been.
Yeah, John. That article, Bring Back Branch Magazines, and I followed it with another article in Military Review called Low Crawling to Obscurity, but both kind of really document kind of the collapse of the Army's branch journals from like a high point in the maybe 1980s. And really, I think it's the transition away from print, but we didn't catch up with then making our stuff accessible. So you asked me earlier, John, about, so over that time, about 20 years, roughly from 2000 to 2020, the Army's journals published less content, less often, and more erratically. And so we saw like total pages fall by about half, issues per year fall by about half. And then when I say erratic, I mean one year they publish three issues, the next year it's six, the next year it's four. And it's hard to keep an audience especially an audience that's used to web-first, mobile-friendly content that arrives on a regular basis rather than like an ad hoc quarterly basis. And so that led me to kind of think really hard about how would we fix our journals. And so you asked me earlier, what is the Harding Project? But I would just say briefly, accessibility and quality are kind of the two things we're aiming for. And so we're doing that by, we launched a website last week called Line of Departure, and that's a web-first, mobile-friendly platform. You can listen to articles. You can read them in line while you're buying your Tornado and your Bang. You can stream the listing. You can print if you want to take it to an LPD, right? We're trying to make that as accessible as possible. So Line of Departure .army.mil is where you can find that. We also published a special issue of Military Review for folks that want to know how to get started. John, you contributed an article on how to work with an editor, but we have how to write an article, how to run a unit writing program, provide these guides to the force as part of the outreach. Staffing is a part of it too. When I looked at those journals, I saw the staffing levels fell dramatically from staffs of like 5 to 7 per journal to like 1, maybe a part-time PAO. And so what we've done is invested basically one uniform, roughly right now they're all captains, one major, one sergeant first class, but this will vary over time, to provide that link between the operating force and the journal. So look for that Harding Fellowship. It's now an official Army broadening opportunity. We're going to send you to KU for a year and then work you as a branch editor. It's a great opportunity. And then the next part we also work on is our archives. And so this is like Armor goes back to 1888. And so we're going to make all that searchable so you can find all those articles on Google Scholar, on the Line of Departure, different places. And then education is the last piece of our platform there. And this is focused on just making sure the journals are integrated in our schools. And so this means for NCOs and hopefully soon for officers, there's a citation requirement that'll get you at E5, E6, E7, and then at the Sergeant Major's Academy into the journals to be familiar with them. And we launched a fellowship at the Sergeant's Major Academy for those who have an aptitude and inclination to write. So sorry to give you my talking points there, John, but like that's what we're doing. And it's a pretty comprehensive package aimed at trying to renew these journals.
Yeah, the Line of Departure website it's impressive. It's a marked improvement over how these publications were being published previously, and it's exactly what you'd expect from a modern publishing outlet. But it isn't solely a case of, you know, if you build it, they will come, right? The way people consume information has changed. The number of outlets in the information landscape has exploded. So you're now sort of competing with all of those other things. Zach, what's your case to say leaders at all levels across the Army, from the senior most levels to the junior most levels, who have, you know, their sort of set of websites that they open first thing in the morning or that they scroll through when they have a few minutes? What's your case that this should be among them?
John, I think there's a demand here. And really the success of MWI and War on the Rocks and somewhere else shows, you know, is the evidence, some of the evidence that I have, right, is like if there wasn't a demand for this content, you wouldn't have 80,000 Twitter followers or whatever it is. Part of the mission of the Harding Fellows is to make sure that they're publishing quality content of interest to their branch and then also pushing it through channels that are going to reach that audience, right? So, like, I'm kind of an old man in the Army now. I don't know what the kids are doing, but that captain or sergeant is going to push this content through Twitter on whatever platform people are on, right? So that at least we compete in that space. So I think that's, you know, some of the ways we're going to compete for that time, but also, you know, just having articles that are well edited and good. I hope the quality, will get it in people's rotation.
Leighton, you moved into this job after being a platoon sergeant. It's a job you'll get back to. It's a great job for an NCO in the Army, an important job. And one I know that you love because you've told me. How do you conceptualize this? How writing fits alongside the really vital work that NCOs do in the Army, mentoring soldiers, working with other NCO leaders, and, you know, in the case of a platoon sergeant, working to make your platoon better.
Yeah. I'll start by saying that good ideas don't have rank. I think we might have mentioned that a minute ago, or maybe we were talking about it before. But you hear great ideas from team leaders, squad leaders, across the formation, MOS immaterial, branch immaterial. It doesn't matter. So, you know, at some of the lowest levels, like myself, at the platoon sergeant level, you know, getting soldiers engaged in professional discourse writ large, you know, getting them into the journals and reading and seeing, having that intrinsic impact, you know, like what did this do for me? It's sometimes hard to measure, but I think that's kind of the first step, is getting soldiers to start reading, engaging with that type of content, like Colonel Griffith said, on Line of Departure, and then fostering better discussion that comes out of that. You know, if you read something that relates to what you're working on, well, then maybe we have a better idea because of that. It happens all the time in a very informal way. And then showing them that you can, that anybody can do it. There's a lot of NCOs who think that
This is, you know, writing is for officers. You know, I don't have a degree. I don't have a background in writing. It's not for me. And that's where I would argue the opposite. Maybe not the opposite, but that's a false way to look at it, because my own academic upbringing is not pretty. And I was able to do it. You know what I mean? It's just proof that anybody can. So getting soldiers into the journals and engaging with the content and letting those good ideas foster outside of that, and then whatever ideas that they have, encouraging them to put them back into the journals. You know, that's the professional service that we owe the Army, is like, if you have a good idea, voice it, put it at MWI, put it in the infantry, put it, you know, wherever it belongs, and help the Army progress in that manner.
And you'd know better than we do, but I imagine there are a host of sort of small group discussions, one-on-one conversations taking place in barracks, in day rooms, on ranges, with soldiers describing, honestly, really legitimate solutions and important solutions to problems that the Army faces that they've experienced. Are you seeing, I guess, any parallels between those conversations and the ones taking place in professional military writing outlets?
Yeah, like especially in right now the SUAS category, you see tons of content being written that sounds like the same types of conversations that we would have had on the range, you know, talking about how do we maximize effectiveness of our Black Hornets or our Ravens or, you know, whatever it is. So yeah, my answer is yes. Yeah.
And this is a challenge, right? How do we get those soldier, NCO, junior leader perspectives into the wider professional military discourse? Zach, I want to ask you, you know, there's something I've been thinking about for a while. There's an argument to be made, and it has been, including by people at MWI, that writing is a hallmark of any profession. If the profession of arms is truly a profession, this is one of the things that we must do, write and share ideas. But, you know, playing devil's advocate, is that really true? Do we have enough other ways for information to spread across the force without public platforms like these?
I think it's a good question. Having, you know, when I was teaching at West Point, we taught Huntington, who has different views, but, you know, he really makes it clear that as an expert, you need to have a body of knowledge to share expertise. And so doctrine is sort of like the formal way we think about this, but doctrine is pretty slow to iterate and requires something to feed it. And so I really think that our system of journals and the fact that it is totally public and unclassified is really like a superpower for the United States Army. Because we are, I think some people don't understand too, like, we are uniquely privileged in our ability to speak. You know, diplomats at state don't get to speak. People in foreign countries don't really get to speak unless they're generals. And so the fact that, you know, me, Major Griffiths, can write an article saying, hey, our whole system of journalists is totally messed up and we need to fix it, is sort of like a hallmark of what we do. Or the foreign disclosure example we went earlier, like, in other places that could get you crushed. But here, like, we tolerate respectful dissent. And so whether it's a requirement for a profession or not, I don't know. I think there's academics that can debate that for us. But I know that it makes our profession better that we have this system of professional journals.
Have you had any interactions over the past year with NCOs? Because you've made the point that some NCOs think writing is officers' business, right? Mm-hmm. And to be upfront, my personal opinion is that the Army hasn't done enough to sort of counter that narrative, although there are some important signs that's changing. But, you know, have you had conversations with NCOs over the past year where you've run into that pushback? And if so, what do you tell them?
It's usually about trying to inspire them to see why it's beneficial. And I found that most people resonate when I ask them, what's the point of a personal journal, right? And because everybody always comes to the same conclusion, that it's designed to capture an experience of something that happened or a thought or an insight, so that way you can later reflect on it. And then the ultimate goal is that you improve from it in some way, shape, or form, whether it's subtle or massive and significant. The Army's journals serve the same purpose. So when you educate people in that way and you show them some tangible examples, a lot of people tend to resonate with it, even NCOs. And so that's one of the things that we've done recently later today, actually, the Muddy Boots section of the NCO Journal will launch. And that is the entire intent of that. We're trying to capture and immortalize the experience of some of our most senior non-commissioned officers, because they have this immense well of knowledge that everybody should be trying to tap into. And because there is that stigma that it's the officer business, you know, it never gets written. And they have so many lessons and stories and experiences that we can all benefit from. So that's what we're challenging the nominative command sergeant major population to do, is, you know, capture that experience, and then challenge the NCO Corps to engage in professional discourse, whether it's the written or podcast or some kind of discussion, take it to LPDs, you know, whatever, and drive good conversation that leads to positive change in the Army based on that NCO's experience and, you know, whatever it was that that Command Sergeant Major chose to write about. So, yeah.
We were just talking about this, Leighton. We have a mutual acquaintance, a guy from my hometown who enlisted in the Army and was an E-4 several years ago, assigned to the Op 4 Battalion at JMRC, the Combat Training Center in Germany, when you were there as an NCO. And he did some very creative things on the Op 4 side in terms of, you know, identifying targets during units, yep, JMRC rotations. It was really clever stuff. And I guess from your perspective, you know, when innovative solutions come from junior NCOs or even privates, and I hope Army leaders appreciate the number of creative ideas that do come from these junior ranks, you know, what's your advice to, say, mm-hmm, platoon sergeants who have good ideas coming from within their platoons to share those ideas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So the special edition kind of lays that out almost in a linear fashion, which I really love. And so as a platoon sergeant, though, you know, for this mutual friend that we're talking about, you know, if I could go back and do it again, I would have had him take that idea, because what he did was phenomenal. And he was able to use dating sites to find guys that had that were out in the field and had their phones when they shouldn't. And we were able to figure out where you were. And this was a really cool thing, because he's an intel guy. They have certain rules where they can't gather intel on U.S. soldiers. So as Op 4, like, that's a challenge for him. And he found this really innovative way to kind of work around that. And it was really cool. And so, you know, that's an experience and a lesson learned that he can share with other people. One, as the Op 4 community, like, you can learn from that. But more so, it can illustrate the impact for the Blue 4, the guys that are training, that are, you know, might be deploying soon. It can show that how important it is to not do that, right? So looking back, I think the steps to leading that lead to publication are, you know, I should have had him put that in like a white paper and circulate it around in our battalion, you know, send it up to our battalion commander and say, like, what do you think we could have done to make it better? Things like that. Maybe even share it with our brigade or something to that effect. But you garner interest, you garner feedback. And then what you have is you have this like pre-made outline for an article. You have this compelling experience. You have, you know, this message that you're trying to share with everybody. And then you can challenge everybody else to try to either do the same or poke holes in our plans. That way you can make us better. Right. And so that's, to me, that's kind of the step-by-step is white paper, circulate it internally, and then once a week work with him, you know, every other week, something to that effect, help him slowly get his paper together. And so that way he has a nice article that he can publish at MWI or wherever is appropriate.
You know, John, that's one of the reasons, too, we sent that special issue we sent 18,000 copies to every battalion and above in the Army. And with those guides explicitly. So I sort of hope that maybe even if Sergeant Summerlin's not there to walk this guy through the process, he might, while he's on staff duty or whatever, see it and be inspired. Because mm-hmm. It shows, you know, how do you write an article? How do you write a white paper? How do you run a unit writing program? How do you work with an editor, which you contributed? And so that's one of the reasons we sent it to the whole Army, was to hope to catch those people or inspire them for some years to come.
And I want to say, you know, Leighton, aside from the Military Review Special Edition, which is a fantastic resource, you wrote something that we recently published at MWI, and it contained one of my favorite all-time pieces of writing advice. You encourage authors to understand what the rules are and break them. And I loved it because, you know, those rules, they get in the way of sharing so many important ideas. But at the end of the day, there's no wrong way of doing it. The, you know, the first draft mm-hmm. might not be as right as it can be, but that's why it's just a first draft. The point is just to get started. Zach, you know, shifting gears slightly, I want to ask you about accessibility. Line of Departure and all of its publications are public-facing, as is MWI. I know Line of Departure has just launched, and I don't have visibility on the metrics, but for MWI, for example, we can publish something that is read by tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people. There's a very good chance that a majority of those readers aren't U.S. military personnel. Why is it important to do this in a way that isn't sort of ring-fenced, say, with a CAC wall?
I think accessibility is the reason why we need to do it public facing. And that's just to say that if we, you know, we are so stovepipes in the Army and we're so hierarchical that, you know, papers go up and they come down, but they don't move side to side. I missed so many opportunities, I know, as a team leader and SF company commander, because I just, was kind of too busy, or I didn't ask, you know, I didn't know what else was going on at Fort Carson, and I didn't have a way to figure it out. But by writing, you know, it just breaks down these barriers, and you can develop communities of interest, ideas that maybe the interim levels don't have an interest in, but the top level does. It can get up there, stuff can filter down. And so, I mean, to me, this is really all about accessibility. And if you're behind a CAC wall, like the Center for Army Lessons Learned produces fantastic products, but people largely are not aware of them or don't use them as much as they could, because you need a CAC card to go and see them. And so to me, really the superpower of our journals is the accessibility that comes from being unclassified.
Yeah, there used to be two websites, web forms really, platoonleader.com, I think, and companycommander.com or .net, something like that. They've since been taken over by the Center for Junior Officers, and that's a great organization. And as far as I know, both platforms still exist under CJO. But they're now behind a CAC wall or a registration and login wall. So, you know, I can't just now take out my phone and start reading them easily. The flip side to that, however, is that when you write something for public-facing platforms, which don't have that sort of access limitation, there's a risk of judgment, of criticism. And it's one thing to share your ideas with a small group of peers and, you know, accept critiques from somebody who says, hey, we tried to do that and it didn't work. That's fine. It's another thing altogether to get criticism from, you know, sort of anonymous users. What would you say to somebody who, I guess, is hesitant to write and says, you know, I don't want to be judged?
I would say the risk is way higher in what most people do every day than when they write. And what I mean is, like, Sarah and I are sitting on a bunch of panels here, and if I go off message or say something, like, I can't take that back in any way. And so when you're speaking public, or people are on social media every day, and they're like, that is a much higher risk activity than the Army's journals. We really have a whole system that's designed to make sure that we have disciplined debate. And so what I mean is, like, I'm going to write a paper, I'm going to send it to Sarah Summerlin, I'm going to send it to, you know, he's going to give me feedback. He's going, are you sure this is really what you want to say? You really want to take a shot at the chief of staff of the Army? And I'm like, well, maybe you're right. I'll rephrase it. And then I go to you, the editor, and you then push back again. You're like, hey, this, are you sure this is what you mean to say? Let's work it a little bit here and there. And then finally it goes out into publication. So that's quite a bit of review, right? Yeah. Like, I several times have had to, you know, either override your advice or something before it goes live. And so, I mean, yeah, there's always going to be some risk of things we do in life, but I don't think it's that great. And the other thing I would say on this is, in Low Crawling to Obscurity, I published a survey of 73 military authors, and only one really reported any sort of negative repercussions for what they said. And so I think, you know, I've also written dozens of articles and not had any issues here. So I think the risk is low, and the potential benefits, both in a, like, what's in it for me standpoint, and then more importantly, what's in it for the Army, are so much greater. And so I really hope people will use their opportunity to speak.
Yeah, no, I was just going to double down and say that, you know, by the time it gets published, it's, well, polished is not exactly what I mean, but you are comfortable with it because you've iterated it so many times that, you know, by the time it goes to MWI, it's, you know, it's something I completely agree with because it's my work and I have taken your advice, I've taken Colonel Griffith's advice, and yeah, so everything else that we do in life has a lot higher risk than writing.
You know, I think that's a really important point. I've worked at publishing outlets that are inside sort of the official tent, like MWI, and outside outlets, and they are different. That's not to say that, you know, men and women in uniform shouldn't write for those external publications. They should. It's another way of getting important ideas out there. But I think it's significant that, you know, these publications under Line of Departure are Army publications. They've got Army officers working there as editors who have, I guess, you know, sort of a nuanced understanding of the issues and an interest in protecting both the platform and its authors. It's something we definitely do at MWI. There are often times when an Army author writes something, you know, and I look at it and there's a risk it will be perceived in a way that could potentially cause blowback on that person. We work really hard to protect against that. As I know, I'm sure, you know, the editors at Line of Departure Publications will as well. It's hard for me to think of a single time that that risk has sort of manifested and created any sort of problem for the author. But there are many, many times where an author will email me a day or two after an article publication saying, hey, General so-and-so just sent me a note to thank me for writing it. Or, you know, such and such an organization or unit has just invited me to come and speak to them based on what I wrote in this article. I think that's really important as sort of an indicator of how powerful and unique an opportunity writing is to have influence in the Army.
Yeah, just to build on that really quick, you know, I would, if you're a leader out there who wants to encourage this, you know, there's no better way than to call and email an author and just say thanks for the piece, because that loop so rarely gets closed. Like, you know, we, Sergeant Strom and I sit in the Chief's initiatives group or coordination group, and we routinely pull in pieces. And you know what? We don't always tell, you know, that help inform the discussions we're having. We don't always close the loop with the author. And like, we should, right? Hey, like, your paper influenced discussions at the most senior levels in the Army. And so, you know, at any level, take 3 minutes if you read a good piece or you share it in LPD to contact the author and just say thanks, because that can really help drive cultural change and get us thinking hard.
Yeah. Yesterday, coincidentally, I ran into General Rainey as I was leaving lunch with Sergeant First Class Blood, my replacement. And, you know, I asked him to confirm the story that I'd heard, and he had, and he has approved me telling the story to others. But, you know, this four-star general for AFC, Army Futures Command, he, you know, we talked a lot about it. He's a prolific reader. He reads tons of what's produced by the Army, as well as what's outside the Army, like you mentioned before. And he does this really cool thing where if he reads something that piques his interest for any reason whatsoever, he'll put it on his calendar to carve out 15 minutes and reach out to Colonel Griffiths to talk about, you know, flag officership and, you know, and all the things that he writes about, right? Things like that. And whether he agrees with it or if he disagrees with it, he said that the ones that disagree are like really interesting because it drives great discussion that leads to better thought provoking things. But so even, you know, from to Colonel Griffiths' point, you know, that's like if I read something from MWI, I reach out to Captain Lipsky and say, hey, that was a great piece, I really appreciate it. Or even if I disagree with it. But for senior leaders to do that, I mean, that's another huge way that we can help show people how important this is. So for any senior leaders out there who listen to this, you know, I would ask that you do something similar. You know, because it doesn't have to just be the four stars that do that. It can be a battalion commander. It can be a whoever. Like, it means the world when that feedback loop gets closed. And I met a guy in Hawaii. He was a major. He was a SAMS grad. And he said that the most disheartening thing about his 90-page monograph that he wrote was that 7 people read it. And he was like, it's the 7 people who were grading my monograph who had to poke holes in it. He's like, nobody else read it, you know? And so, yeah, when you close that feedback loop, it's tremendous. And so we talk about how do you normalize a culture of professional writing and discourse. Colonel Griffiths is absolutely right. And then that's kind of the peer and like subordinate, you know, that level. And then I think that from the senior's perspective, that's something else that we can do that will help very quickly change the culture that we have currently.
Did you experience that sort of feedback loop when you wrote your first piece, the one you mentioned about standards, besides getting called to spend a year in the Pentagon?
I mean, there is that. That was huge for sure. But yeah, so what I found out later, a couple years later, was that the class that I was teaching was still being taught. And even though the in-person class version had changed slightly because iterative degradation, it's just a natural process of things. The article that I had written was being handed out as take-home material for all the students. So, I mean, you talk about lasting impact. Like, I didn't know that until almost 2 years after making MCO DSOY. So, I mean, that's huge, you know? So, yeah, when I found that out, I mean, you have no idea whose lives you impacted. And, you know, that's one of the downsides. I can't put a number on it, but it's also one of the upsides. It's just great to think about that you help somebody become a better leader, you know? So,
well, as we close out, Zach, I want to ask you first, you know, most of the Army members who write for MWI are repeat authors. It's still a pretty small segment of the Army population that actually puts pen to paper. What's your pitch to the, you know, the large majority who have not yet taken that step to start writing?
You know, I think the first thing I would ask people to do is to get on and read The Line of Departure and MWI. I think if we can get more folks to read, that's going to lead to more folks to write. On the pitch to write, you know, I have found such tremendous opportunity that has come, you know, on a sort of strictly what's in it for me standpoint, you know, tremendous opportunity that's come from writing. Either whether it's just like meeting interesting people like you and like Sergeant Summerlin, whether, you know, I interviewed for a job as a CAG chief, and I didn't know, and I got called in to interview, and the general basically just wanted to see if I had a haircut because he knew I'd written, and he was like, hey, Zach's going to be all right for a CAG chief. And so, there's other opportunities. You know, I got picked for a fellowship and these other things that, you know, come from just being able to communicate in writing and sort of identifying you have ideas. And so, you know, on a strictly personal level, you know, there's benefits. And then also, like, ultimately, it's professionals. We should want the Army to be better. And we should feel like we have agency to make the Army better. And that's really what this writing does, right? It, like, bakes an idea, makes recommendations, directs it to someone that can make decisions. They may or not use it, but, like, you can make change in the Army. And so, like, you know, believe sort of you have that agency and do some writing.
Leighton, I guess to wrap up, I want to turn back to the NCO Corps. You know, a lot of NCOs, and frankly, a lot of officers too, they know what a successful career path looks like, and they don't necessarily see writing as a vital component of it. Mm-hmm. What would you say to an NCO, you know, who says, I know how to be a really good NCO, and my job isn't to be at my computer writing for a wide audience. My job is to be focused on my squad, my platoon, my company, and making those soldiers the best they can be.
Yeah. I would say that it's a professional courtesy to make sure that if you're the best, well, then you should share your story. You should share your experience in a way that other people can resonate with it. So that way they become better too. Because at the end of the day, you don't do anything by yourself. I might be the platoon sergeant, but we're doing a company movement to some degree, and I'm going to rely on the platoons next to me. So if I can do something, if I'm doing something well, then I owe it to the rest of the Army to share that. Or if I have an idea, I owe it to the Army to share that. So that way we can all get better, because it really is the tide that raises all ships. And it doesn't matter if you're a platoon sergeant, a squad leader, a PL. Like, the ideas are, like I said, are rank and material. They don't matter. So the experiences are rank and material. You might go your whole career and miss this unique experience, but if I've gone through that and it was good and it was beneficial, and then a platoon sergeant, you know, across the sea over in Fort Lewis can benefit from it, well, then we just made the Army 1% better, and that's tremendous. So,
well, as we sit here, you know, the three of us, you're sort of preaching to the choir when you're talking to me. I'm obviously a big believer in the importance of writing, but I hope among the people who listen to this, there are men and women in uniform who haven't yet taken the step to write, but that are encouraged to do so after listening to the two of you. For practical help, for listeners who maybe haven't seen a hard copy of the Military Review Special Edition, one of the 18,000 copies that were sent out, I'll be sure to link to it in the show notes for this episode, and we will continue to share those resources going forward. Now as the Harding Project enters its second year and continues to kind of re-energize professional writing. So thank you both so much for joining me.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to the MWI podcast. One last thing, if you aren't yet following MWI on social media, you can find us on Twitter/X, Facebook, or LinkedIn. It is a great way to stay up to date on all of the new articles, podcast episodes, research, and more that we're publishing every day. Thanks again.